So I'm speaking with Ross Caldwell, the director of the Independent Police Review Division of the Portland City Auditor's Office. Director Caldwell, how are you doing today?
I'm doing pretty good. Thank you much.
Absolutely. And so I wanted to check in a little bit first. Could you just tell me and our listeners a little bit about yourself and what your career was like before you took over IPR?
Oh yeah, sure. So I am originally from a little town in Washington, kind of by Mount St. Helens, called Toledo. I went to law school here in Portland at Lewis and Clark, and when I got out, I worked for the district attorney's office. I started working there as an intern in 2011, and I worked there until 2015. Worked in various different parts of the office, and from there, I went down to work for the Criminal Justice Commission, which is a state agency in Salem. And the Criminal Justice Commission is kind of a data clearing house for the state of Oregon's criminal justice system. There I worked a lot on the Justice Reinvestment Program, which is a program designed to use less prison to keep people out of prison for nonviolent offenses and to save the state some money and to reinvest that money in local public safety systems for better mental health treatment, better addiction treatment, things like that. So I worked on that and a bunch of kind of criminal justice reform policy measures. Then I ended up a little less than a year ago taking this job up here at the Independent Police Review in the auditor's office for the city of Portland.
Great, thank you for that. So since the death of George Floyd near at the end of May, has IPR taken or pushed for any specific changes to its mandate or processes in response to these calls for change?
Yeah, we've actually had a lot of things in place that we were starting to work on even before that happened. So, like I said, I've been at IPR a little less than a year, and the deputy director, Dana, has been there 2 weeks less than I have. So, we're both pretty new. And I think we spent the first part of our time just kind of trying to learn the IPR system because it is very complicated. And then beyond that, to kind of learn the whole police accountability system. And I'd worked with Portland Police in various capacities when I worked at the district attorney's office and worked with various other law enforcement agencies and kind of from more of a policy angle at my previous job at the Criminal Justice Commission. But you really got to learn kind of how things work locally and where all the levers are. And so we spent a lot of time working on that, and we identified a number of changes we wanted to make to our process to have better accountability and greater transparency. And we worked on, we had a lot of conversations with our boss, the auditor, about that, and she's very supportive of that. They matched up well with things that she wanted to change. If they didn't, I don't think we ever would have been hired to take these jobs. Long story short, we had a whole bunch of changes we had that we were looking at, and I really thought that we'd be kind of chipping away at these for years. And some of them involve amending the union contract, some of them involve city code changes, and some of them involve changes to state statutes. And so that's kind of a lot. And that's kind of a lot in the old world before George Floyd was killed and all the protests started. And since that time, there has been such a tremendous focus on policing, the impacts of policing, and police reform, and then police accountability, including on our local system, that everything has kind of, it feels like a dam has really broken. It's something that I kind of never really thought I would actually see happen, where there's this much energy and attention around this stuff. And so some of the changes that we had hoped to make in the next few years and to really chip away at suddenly seem, maybe within reach, or like they could have a ton of support. And so I think there's a really great opportunity here to move things forward. It's also a little challenging because so many people are interested in this and weighing in on this, which is fantastic, but it does create a somewhat chaotic environment where I think we need to make sure that we can kind of bring in everybody's voice on this and figure out what's going to work for everyone. Because the system that we have right now, which has been evolving for the last couple of decades into what it currently is, it clearly is not sufficient. And so I think we have a lot of opportunity here to make great improvements.
And Are you able to say what some of those changes are that were underway already?
Yeah, the stuff that we'd started working on already is we want to have better access to police data. So right now we get police reports, you know, we get kind of city code says that we have access to everything that Portland Police Bureau has. And there are some kind of federal criminal justice information system requirements. There are some things that we have to get in a redacted way or that we don't have immediate access to. But the way that we get access from the police bureau is really clumsy. We usually have to go through internal affairs or some other administrative body within the police bureau to get access. We don't have direct access. I couldn't go on my computer right now and log in and look up a police report. I would have to, you know, we'd have to make a public records request, and we get those quicker than the public does because we have to for our investigations. But we should be able to have much more direct access to that. We also we're working on trying to get underlying data that if you've ever looked at the police bureau's website, they have a lot of data dashboards about who they stop and who they search. And there's also where I used to work at the Criminal Justice Commission, one of the things I got to work on was the STOP program, and that is the statistical transparency of policing, and that is tracking who police stop and search and looking for racial and ethnic disparity in those numbers, which they, you know, the Criminal Justice Commission in their crunching of those numbers has found in the city of Portland and in who PPB pulls over and searches. And you know, it's predictable. It's what you would expect. It's more stops and more searches of black people than it is of white people. And so we wanted to try to marry all those numbers together. And you know, when we have the underlying data, we can do our own analysis. We don't have to just kind of look at the analysis on the police bureau's website, but we can do our own. So we're working on getting those things. We have also identified a couple of state statutes that need to be changed in order for us to be more transparent with our investigations. Right now, the default is that our investigations cannot be released. So if somebody makes a complaint to our office and we investigate that complaint, we are not allowed to release that file. So if you were making, if you had an interaction with a police officer, a Portland police officer, we would not be able to release the file to you, and you wouldn't be able to look at our investigation and say, I think they talked to the right people. I think they interviewed all the witnesses, and I think they asked the right questions, and I think they did it in the right way. They weren't asking leading questions. They weren't asking softball questions. They, you know, and they found all the videos they could find, and they did all the, you know, it was a thorough investigation. And so the situation that we're in right now is we have a system where we do all kinds of work, but nobody ever gets to see it. And I think that that does not breed trust in our system. And it also, you know, it doesn't allow people to see kind of the more complicated problems with how police interact with the public. And what I mean by that is, police bureau, when we're investigating a complaint, it's not a criminal investigation, it's an administrative investigation. So we're investigating whether or not a police officer violated a directive. So the directives are the rules that govern police behavior. And those directives give police a ton of discretion. And so one example that I've heard people use is, you know, you could have five people that all, you know, speed down the street in their cars by a cop, and they're all going the same speed, but the cop could pick one person, pull out, and you know, just pull that one person over. And that person could file a complaint and say, you know what, you only pulled me over, but everybody else, all these other four cars were going the same speed that I was. And that wouldn't be a violation of a police bureau directive. You know, to make a have an example related to the protests, you could have somebody, you know, who's in one of the protests, who's marching and who's marching in the street, which is normally not what you know, what you would be allowed to do. And they could be marching in the street all day long, right in front of police officers for hours. And police, you know, didn't bat an eye. They didn't arrest that person. They didn't say anything. They didn't tell him to get out of the street. And then, you know, something happens and the police say, this is an unlawful assembly, or this is a riot, or something like that. And then that person could be arrested for disorderly conduct. And that's something that we're seeing happen with the protests on a, you know, on a nightly basis. And that is within a police officer's discretion. So if we did an investigation as the directives are currently written, we would not be able to find that a police officer violated a directive because their directives give them that much discretion. And so I think that without our investigations being able to be fully transparent and to be made public, it's very hard for the public to weigh in and see, you know, where these directives are kind of falling short, because they might be able to say, okay, well, you can't hold them accountable here because they didn't break a rule. But that just means there's a problem with that rule. And so how do we rewrite that rule? And right now there is a process where people can weigh in on changes to police bureau directives, but it's like a 2-week window. The directives are incredibly long. They're very, 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 very complicated. And I think the ACLU, Dan Handelman from Portland Cop Watch, and a few other people are the only ones that really weigh in on those. And we do sometimes, but even we're paid employees, and even our staff, we don't often have the capacity to weigh in on those directives all the time. And it's hard to tell how much that public comment is accepted. So we really think our investigations need to be made public in order to kind of further this process along. And then there's other kind of bigger changes that I've heard proposed, and those would be made above my level. There's a Commissioner Hardesty's got a proposal for a ballot referral. And if you were at the PSEP meeting last week, there's a Professor Snell. I think he's at Pacific University, and he had a really interesting proposal as well. And both those proposals would change who's the ultimate decision maker in police discipline, because right now that decision maker is the mayor. We do investigations at IPR. Internal Affairs also does investigations. We're kind of interwoven in the process, but the ultimate decision maker is the mayor, the police commissioner. And so there's a lot of people that think that that needs to be changed. And so that's not something we were working on before, because to me, that's a city council decision. That's a big ticket policy question that city council is elected to decide those kind of things. And so I think that's another, that's not something we had been working on, because I know that's what you asked me about. But that's another big decision that city council needs to be made, and then you need to kind of work backwards from there to see how everything else fits together.
And you mentioned the crowd control situations, and obviously a major feature of the movement in Portland is these daily street protests on a very wide spectrum of types of protest activity. Are you able to say if IPR has received any like increase or noticeable change in the number of complaints based on police actions during crowd control situations?
Yeah, we've received a huge, huge, huge increase. We've received several thousand emails, voicemails. A lot of those, most of those are not things that we can actually investigate, because they're more kind of defund the police or don't use tear gas. They're kind of like more like big picture policy statements, I guess. And a lot of them, I think there's a lot of form letters out there where people can go to a website and they can. It's kind of like signing a petition or something like that. So we've received a ton of those, but we've also received a really large increase in complaints about specific interactions with Portland Police Bureau officers, which is what we need to be able to launch an investigation. So if somebody calls us and says, "I think we should defund the police. I don't like what they're doing. You guys should do something about it." We don't control the police bureau's budget. We don't make their we do policy reviews, and so we can try to influence their policies, but we're not the ultimate decision makers on what the how the police bureau is structured or anything like that. We get the chance to weigh in, but those are something that we would probably have to forward to the mayor's office as the police commissioner or something like that. But we've got quite a few, a much higher volume than we normally have of complaints from people about specific interactions with Portland Police Bureau, and then also about interactions with law enforcement officers that they're not sure if they're Portland Police Bureau or if they're, some other law enforcement agency, whether it's county or local or the feds. And so we've got a little over, I think, 50 investigations currently open that are related to the protests. And that might not sound like a ton, but that is 50 individual incidents that are being investigated. And then we've got a bunch more where we are trying to track down. We're able to open investigations kind of on our own volition. So if we see a video on social media or online somewhere or on the news that is something that happened in the protest that we think is problematic, we can open up on our own. So we've got more of those where we're trying to identify the people. And one thing we always have to figure out is this a Portland cop? Because if it's not a Portland cop, we don't have any jurisdiction. We're City of Portland employees, and our office is basically we're a creature of city code. So we don't get to, that horrible video that I think everybody's seen from over the weekend, where the federal law enforcement agent shoots the guy holding the jukebox over his head and fractures his skull with a rubber bullet or foam tip bullet. I'm not sure what kind of munition it was, but
Yeah.
that's not something we can do anything about. It's outside of our purview. But yeah, long story short, I guess it's not short at this point, but
Oh, you're
we
fine.
have a lot more investigations going than we normally do related to the protests.
Okay, and I'm glad you touched on the sort of outside agency dynamic there. Is that something you would forward to an appropriate agency, or would the complaint have to come directly from the civilian?
No, that's something that we can forward. Yeah, and I know,
Okay.
these other law enforcement agencies, they don't have a civilian oversight of law enforcement office that focuses on them the way Portland Police Bureau does. So, not too long after I got hired, we got to go to a conference in Detroit, which was is called NACOLE, NACOLE, and it's the National Association for the Civilian Oversight of Law Enforcement. It's a lovely acronym, but they, one of the things I learned at that conference was that in the whole United States, there are only 145 known civilian oversight of law enforcement bodies, of which we are one of them. And if you took all of those in the whole United States and stuck them in Oregon, you wouldn't even be able to cover all of the Oregon law enforcement agencies. And so this is a pretty young field in a lot of ways. And, if you could rewind the clock 3 months and compare IPR in Portland to all those other law enforcement agencies, we are one of the most robust as far as we have our own investigators. We get to do our own investigations. We get to make recommendations on findings. We get to be a voting member on the recommendation to the police chief and then to the mayor. So we don't get to make discipline decisions, but we are kind of very interwoven throughout the process. In a lot of places, they just don't have something like this at all. Or if they do, they have, maybe a volunteer board that doesn't really have staff and is just kind of doing this on a volunteer basis without anybody who's actually getting paid to be there and focus on this all the time. So, it used to look like we were kind of one of the most fortunate, and now we're having these conversations about how, is what we do sufficient at all in any way? And, my opinion is that no, it's not. We need to greatly improve this. We need to this is an opportunity to move what is, I think, a surprisingly young field because law enforcement's been around forever, to move civilian oversight of law enforcement forward, hopefully by real significant strides here in the near future. But it's going to take a lot of very detailed work to do it.
Okay. In mid-June, former Chief Resch allowed officers doing crowd control to cover their name tags and badge numbers to ostensibly to prevent them from being doxxed. And has this policy, or do you think it could interfere with your ability to investigate incidents like you mentioned?
Yeah, so it hasn't so far, but it does have the potential to. And we've been talking to the police chief and to the mayor's office about that because it's an obvious concern. Weirdly, and this is, I think, just a very unintended consequence, sometimes it actually can help us because when only Portland police are doing that, or at least that's how it has started, if we see one of those name tag covers, we know that's a Portland cop. And one of the things that we always have to figure out during these protests is, are we looking at, if we're looking at a video, is it a Portland cop? Is it a Gresham cop? Is it Multnomah County Sheriff's Office, Clackamas County Sheriff's Office? Is it OSP? Is it one of these, one of the many federal agencies that are now down there? We also, the other part of this is that we've got really good over the year, and this is before I was at IPR, so I'm not taking any credit for it, but our investigators have got really good at finding various ways to identify police officers. In a lot of the videos we get from protests, the quality of the video, and a lot of them are at night, so that makes it tougher too, but the quality is not good enough that you can actually read a name tag. And so we have found, even before they were covering their name tags, we found that there's a lot of other ways that we have to go about identifying officers. And if a complainant is able to give us, the date, the time, and the location, even if it's approximate time, we're able to often track down who those officers are. And we get some of the police reports that we get from the protests. We get all these after-action reports, which are all use of force that the police report. But then we also get kind of the incident plan for the protest. And that tells us which officers are on which teams and where those teams are located. And often with these videos, and we can have a complainant send us one video, but then we can go online and find a whole bunch of other videos from that time. We're often able to kind of piece things together and through, which is fairly laborious detective
Yeah.
work, try to figure out, okay, which team was that there? Okay, we think it's definitely Multnomah County Sheriff's Office over here, and it's definitely Portland Police Bureau over here, and this is the area that we're focused on, and then we can kind of go from there. And sometimes we ask for help from internal affairs with this, and they actually have been very helpful a bunch of times. Our investigators spend time doing things like looking at, zooming in on these pictures and looking at the patches on the uniforms, because riot gear kind of looks like riot gear, and police
Yeah.
uniforms, as the police have become increasingly militarized in their outfits, it's really hard to tell them apart. Like, is that a black uniform or is it a dark navy blue? It's all gonna look the same in a video taken from a cell phone in the middle of the night. And so we look at, if it's got the star patch, maybe it's the Multnomah County Sheriff. If it's a different patch, it could be the police bureau. So we've gotten pretty good at that. We also have, this doesn't apply as much to the protests because they're not driving around as much as they are on foot, but we're able to track GPS and PPV vehicles, and so we can tell, if somebody has a complaint, they're like, I got pulled over, I feel like I was racially profiled, I don't know what the name of the cop was, but I don't like how he talked to me. If we can get date and time information from that, then we can try to, we can see which officers were in that area, and we can often track that down, and then we can start interviewing officers and try to figure out if they're the ones that had this interaction with the person. So it's a lot of work, and this is some of the stuff that doesn't ever get publicly released, and we're not. There are times when we're not able to identify an officer, and there are concerns, certainly, as everybody has rightfully pointed out, with police officers covering up their name tags. But I think over the years we've just had to figure out a lot of other ways to do it. So it hasn't been a huge hamper in our investigation so far, but it is something we're keeping an eye on and having conversations with the mayor's office and the chief's office to try to get them to reconsider how they do this. We don't ultimately get to decide if they do that, but we can try to sway them.
And I wanted to sort of pivot in the last several minutes here to the Citizen Review Committee, which hears misconduct case here appeals of misconduct cases that were had reached a finding stage with the Bureau. Is the recruiting process still ongoing?
It is still ongoing. I know we've had a lot of people reach out. I mean, just because of the huge focus on police accountability, we've had, it's funny because with all of the things going on, I was worried that we weren't putting in enough time to that recruitment process because we hadn't, we had, we've been kind of focused on other things, and it's been kind of a triage situation. But with all this going on, people have actually come to us more than they normally do without us reaching out. So it is ongoing. I think the deadline is at the end of this month, and then sometimes we extend that if we don't have enough applications. But I don't know if that's going to be necessary this time. We've got, we've seen, there seems to be quite a bit of interest.
And are they at least technically still able to hear appeals, even though meetings are happening remotely?
Yeah, they are, and I think they're going to start hearing appeals again. It's pretty challenging. We when the pandemic first started, before the protest started and everybody started working from home, we had to cancel a couple of meetings. Some of the CRC members, a lot of them have kids, and they're working full time, and they have kids at home, and it
Yeah.
was pretty hard for them to do that and then commit to the work required for an appeal, because being on the CRC, there's really a lot asked of them. They're asked to work in kind of three different functions, and it's a big challenge. It's a I think it's I think there might be some there's some problems with how it's structured. I think you're asking a ton of volunteers, and the city needs to find a way to spread that work out better and kind of better define some of the lanes. There's several oversight bodies. There's the PSEP, there's CRC, there's the Training Advisory Council, and I think they've all been kind of created at different times, and it. There hasn't really been a holistic thought process around, if they're all working on police response to protests, do we want three different, volunteer community groups doing that? Or do we want to kind of spread the work out more so that people can actually focus in and have a chance to get more stuff done? And I think that's one of the, I was saying before that I think this is a great opportunity to improve policing and improve police accountability. but it is a little chaotic. And I think right now, groups like the CRC and PSEP and Training Advisory Council, they're trying to, they've been trying to engage with the community for a long time, and all of a sudden it's the fire hose. They're just getting so much coming in that it's almost more than they can handle. And so I think that those boards are incredibly important, and it's important to have the community's voice there. We just need to figure out how can we do this in a thoughtful way so that we don't burn out these volunteers, because they're not getting paid to be there. And there's I think some of them get a stipend on PSEP maybe, but it's not a whole lot, and they really are putting in incredible hours. I know that people that are currently on CRC and PSEP, and I don't know the folks on Training Advisory Council, but from the output that I've seen from their recommendations, they're putting in incredible hours that they're not getting compensated for. And the city's really asking a lot of volunteers. But yeah, they are going to get back to appeals. They have a conference hearing with Chief Lavelle on August 5th, and that is the result of a case that they overturned a few months ago. And then they have a few appeals that need to happen after that. So I think August 5th they'll be back to that business. That's not technically an appeal because the appeal already happened. It's kind of the next step, and then there will be, I think, the next appeal would then be the September meeting, so early September.
Okay. A big issue for the CRC membership, which as you mentioned has been in a lot of flux, but over the past couple of years what I've heard a lot about is the standard of review that they have, the reasonableness standard. And I think just to do you have any intention of advocating to the auditor and council for any sort of change to that standard?
Yeah, I don't have any problem with changing the standard of review. The thing that right now we're in this time where we have bigger conversations going on. The thing that I think the problem to me about that system is that I think last year the CRC only heard four or five appeals, and I just don't think that's a meaningful way to have community engagement on this process. I think that the whole process needs to be more transparent, and the community needs to be involved at the decision-making point. Like right now we have the police review boards, which has some community members on it, but it's all done in a top secret way. Nobody gets to That's not public. Nobody gets to see what happens in those meetings, and that's just a recommendation. And there's community members that are voting members of that. IPR is a voting member of that, so either myself or Dana, the deputy director, would go to that meeting and vote. And then there's more police officers that are voting members of that, and they outweigh the community members and IPR, the people that are inside the bureau do. And then that's just a recommendation that goes to the police chief, and then he makes a recommendation to the mayor. So it's all many steps removed from actual decision making. And I really like the idea of having community members involved in the actual decision making. And I know that's what Commissioner Hardesty's proposal says, and that is what Professor Snell's proposal says. They say that they're different, so you have to make some decisions there, and I think you should have a good discussion around it. But to me, it would be more meaningful to have the community making the ultimate decision instead of just hearing the appeals on the very small number of cases that do get appealed. If we don't end up changing that, and that's not a decision I get to make. That's City Council is elected to make those decisions, and the mayor, they should make that decision. So I'm trying not to step out of my lane too much, but I do think that would be a more meaningful way to have community input. If the situation stays the same and they want to change the standard of review, I have no problem with that whatsoever. The City Council just needs to make that decision. And I think in the past, there has been a lot of tension around the standard of review because all different members of the Citizen Review Committee, like whole different batches of folks that have served on there, different auditors, different people in City Council, different people at Independent Police Review, and probably some of the same people at the Police Bureau, but in different positions. That has always been kind of a point of tension and kind of a sticking point. And so if they decide not to make the larger change, I think that would be a fine thing for them to change. I don't have any problem with it at all. It's just I think we could think a little bigger in this time. But I know that the CRC members, I don't want to speak for them. They can speak for themselves, and they have, and that's something that's important to them. So yeah, I wouldn't have any problem with that being changed. We would continue to do our investigations to the best of our ability and make sure that we get them done as timely as possible and provide the information to the decision makers. So if the if you want to give more power to the community in that way, and make them have the ability to make those decisions a little bit differently, I think that's completely fine. I just think it's, you're only going to hit a small amount of the cases that way.
Yeah. All right. So is there anything you'd like to say before we wrap up that we didn't touch on yet?
I guess the only thing I would mention is that, there has been a lot of criticism, I think, of IPR and the police oversight system recently. And I think that I understand that. I think it's well founded because like I said, I don't think we are able to be transparent. I guess I would just like, the public and your listeners to understand that it's not our decision to release things or not release things. We would love to release all of our investigations. I think that should be the default, and only sensitive information from complainants, should be protected, because there is sensitive information in there, and you don't want, you don't want that getting out into the world. That could really be harmful to people. But we want to change these things and are as frustrated, if not more frustrated, by these things than anyone else because we live in them. We live with these limitations, and in the 9 or 10 months that I've been at IPR, and that Dana, the deputy director, has been at IPR, and my boss Mary has been working on this for longer than we have. These are things that we've identified as things that we want to change and want to improve. So we're really trying to be part of the solution, and we hope that we will be able to show more of our work going forward, and that this opportunity will be taken advantage of.
I've been speaking with Ross Caldwell, the director of the City Auditor's Independent Police Review Division. Director Caldwell, thank you so much for talking with me today.
Hey, thank you. My pleasure.